welcome to We The Podcast. This is our first video version of We The Podcast. We've had a lot of episodes, and so, but you guys are part of an inaugural. Let me introduce you guys to the listeners here. Lena Khan, who is the Director of Legal Policy at Open Markets Institute, a leading anti-monopoly think tank that was started by a group of scholars and advocates who made Google angry by speaking out against its monopoly power. Her work deals with how current law fails to capture market power in the economy and identified legal reforms. Her work on Amazon and monopoly power is amazing, and I recommend everyone to look up Lena Khan. Let me also welcome Stacy Mitchell, who is the co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, an organization that produces research, designs policies, and partners with a wide range of allies to counter the corporate concentration and build more equitable, community-rooted economy. Stacy is the author of Big Box Swindle, about the rise of mega retailers like Walmart. I read that book, you gave me a copy, and I want to talk to y'all today because as I go around my district in Minneapolis and I go around the country, you know, everybody has a sense that the economic fortunes of working people are stagnating. Mm-hmm. People have a sense that student debt is up, rent's up. People have a sense that it's just a little tougher to make ends meet for the average person. Yet you flip on the tube and it looks like the Dow Jones Industrial Average is busting out new heights on a daily basis. And yet people don't feel richer, although the television is telling them that the country is wealthy. Mm-hmm. And when I ask them, why do you think that is? They'll say, well, it's because maybe we haven't raised the minimum wage in 10 years, or maybe it's because unions aren't as strong as they used to be. Maybe trade has something to do with it. But they often do not say that it's because nearly every market, every industry you look in is dominated by three or four companies, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse over the course of time. You know, one of the things I want to ask you guys about is the rise of monopoly. Mm-hmm. And specifically, I want to ask you about Amazon. But is market concentration part of the problem when it comes to the economic fortunes of working in middle-class Americans?
It absolutely is. I mean, I think, you know, these companies are concentrating power and they're cutting off opportunity. You know, it's hard to start a business the way that people used to be able to and get into the middle class that way. And also because they have so much power, they're able to manipulate workers and hold down wages. So this is really, I think, a central part of the problems that you're talking about.
Yeah, we gotta help people understand that when company X gobbles up company Y, that's probably not going to be a good thing for them and their family. Mm-hmm. Lena, you've been thinking about this quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think it's worth recognizing that this is not just an isolated feature of, you know, the rental car industry or the airline industry. It's now a systemic feature of our entire political economy. I mean, it's just sector after sector after sector, be it in beer or food and agriculture. One of my hobbies has now become trying to find the most obscure industry where I can find consolidation. The earthquake insurance industry is so consolidated that there are attorney generals across the country that are now opening investigations into this. So I think it's worth recognizing that this is just true across the board. And as Stacy said, it's really hurting the middle class. There's more research now showing how growing monopolization is contributing to economic inequality.
Right.
Building your own business used to be a way of building assets for, you know, to get into the middle class. This was especially true for immigrant communities, right? So owning your own bodega, owning your own dry cleaning store. So I think the effects of consolidation and monopolization are huge.
And so today, you know, we're opening up our newspapers or our online, you know, news thing. And we're reading about Jeff Bezos just becoming the richest person in the world worth $90 billion, one person worth $90 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And his corporation, Amazon, has seen astronomical growth since its founding in 1994. What does it mean to our economy that Amazon's growth has just been so, so precipitous, so fast? Is there a cost to working people, local control? Is there a cost to small businesses? What do you guys think about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is now capturing one out of every $2 that Americans spend online. They sell more books, toys, clothing, consumer electronics than any other retailer online or off. And they've increasingly become kind of the gatekeeper, you know. So many online shopping searches now start on Amazon instead of people going to a search engine and putting in the product that they want to find and getting multiple choices. They're just starting on Amazon. And the result of that is that competing retailers, competing manufacturers are finding that they no longer are getting any traffic, that they have to become sellers on Amazon's platform. So Amazon is this kind of giant gatekeeper to the economy. And it's really reorganizing our economy in fundamental ways that have lots of impacts on working people and communities.
You know, Lena, you're over there at Legal Policy at Open Markets Institute. You guys are leading the way in many ways on the anti-monopoly thinking that's going on now. Does it have to be this way? I mean, Stacey just sort of described, you know, just sort of the space that Amazon is soaking up in our economy and leaving little room for other entrepreneurs and limiting the access to consumers. But does it have to be this way? I mean, was there a time in our country's history when the law maybe wouldn't have allowed this?
I'm so glad you bring that up. I mean, I think that's exactly right. You know, in many instances, Amazon has gotten where it is because it has undertaken business practices and forms of conduct that previously used to be illegal. You know, there's this impression that Amazon pioneered this new technology, e-commerce, and that that's why it's so powerful. And it's true that this technology has allowed it to concentrate power in this way, but it has done so through predatory tactics, through predatory pricing, through squeezing producers. And, you know, I think changes in our antitrust laws and our anti-monopoly laws have really enabled it to concentrate powers in ways that 30, 40 years ago would not have been possible. And, you know, we've been here before. In the 1890s, early 1900s, we had the Gilded Age. We had the railroads, right? So the railroads transformed commerce. They allowed, you know, farmers to reach whole new markets. And we recognize that that was a good thing, but we also recognize that the power that the railroads had consolidated, they were now abusing. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, we both, you know, recognized that this was a technology that we were going to embrace, that we wanted to, you know, advance our markets, but we didn't want a handful of railroads to be abusing that power. And so we applied rules and regulations that neutralized that power, that said railroads can't pick and choose winners and losers. Among, you know, among Americans. And so I think we're at a similar moment with Amazon where we want to be able to embrace the all of the ways in which online retail makes our lives better, makes our lives easier, but do so in a way that doesn't concentrate all this power and wealth in a single company.
Mm-hmm. You know, Stacey mentioned a little while ago that an institution like a firm like Amazon or even Walmart or many others, because they only have three or four big ones in the whole industry, that they can actually hold down wages. Can you explain how that happened? And in your work at the Open Markets Institute, have you seen the impact on wages in particular for workers?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that Stacey can probably talk a little bit more about too, but I think absolutely. I mean, what, you know, the technical term for this is monopsony power, right? So what that means is that when you have a company that has excessive power over workers, as you see more and more consolidation, that means workers are not able to compete for their labor among different companies. And so that means that these companies, in some instances, are engaging in very, you know, overt forms of collusion and are saying, hey, they call each other up and say, hey, we're not gonna, you know, hire each other's workers. You know, there was a huge cartel in Silicon Valley itself where the Justice Department found where, you know, they were making these kinds of agreements and ensuring that basically wages were stagnant and were not, you know, there was no competition for these workers, and as a result, their wages were being kept down. And so I think that's something that we definitely see.
Well, so monopoly is one, means like one or one seller, and monopsony means one buyer.
Exactly.
Basically. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, just to say one buyer or one seller is not really what we mean nowadays by monopoly or monopsony. What we mean is domination of a market, even if there are others out there, when one big one controls an inordinate amount of the market share, we can call that a monopoly or oligopoly, or, you know, call it like high market concentration. So basically what you're saying is if there's one buyer or three buyers of labor, you know, they can sit around at the country club and say, hey, the wage rate's going to be X. Mm-hmm. You don't give them any more. I won't give them any more. And this is all they're going to get. And if you had a lot of them, a lot of buyers of labor, they really couldn't organize themselves that way, or they'd be easier to be discovered.
Exactly. And I think, you know, this is on the one hand leading to lower wages, but it's also leading to all of these really oppressive contractual terms being introduced, right? So we're hearing more and more about forced arbitration clauses, about non-compete clauses, and these are being tucked into worker contracts. And, you know, if you're a worker and you see this in your contract, you really don't have any leverage to say, I'm not okay with this. I'm going to go to the next person.
Yeah, you know, when we see this, you know, we see this play out in Amazon, you know, as power in a couple of different ways. I mean, one, because we've seen this drop off in small business creation. I mean, we're creating new businesses at a third the rate that we were 20 years ago. We think we're this nation of entrepreneurs, but it's actually become so much harder because of the power of these big companies, because of consolidation in the banking industry. You can't get a loan, you can't rent space, markets are controlled. So people can't start new businesses, and that is a big part of the engine that drives job creation. It's, you know, the new and young growing businesses. So there's not all those new jobs being created to compete for workers. And then when you have a company like Amazon, you know, we've seen this directly in the research that we've done on Amazon's wages, where they're actually able to pay lower wages than other warehouses in the same market because they have so much market power. You know, a lot of times people look at what's going on with Amazon and they say, well, it's automation, you know, that's killing the jobs. And that's maybe part of the story. But you talk to workers and what you realize is that it's just grueling in these warehouses. I mean, people are exhausted. And it's because they have no choice but to take those jobs and Amazon's power to squeeze more and more out of them for low wages because they don't have anywhere else to go for a job.
See, this automation thing to me sounds like a bunch of BS, you know. And let me tell you why I think it's crap. And you guys argue with me. Feel free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay to argue with the host of We the Podcast, all right? But I think it's BS. Let me tell you why. Because when we went from horse and buggy to car, that was a step forward in innovation and in technology. And yet, there are people somehow found a way to keep working. As the agricultural industry has mechanized more, there are a few people in the fields, but there are more people doing a whole lot of other things that are connected to agriculture. I have doubts about whether it is technology that is the problem. They want to say, well, globalization and technology, that's the problem. Well, if we had more equitable trade rules, maybe globalization wouldn't be the problem. And if we had, and if we just continuously retraining people, maybe technology wouldn't be the problem. How wrong am I?
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm so glad you say that because I think a lot of people are misled. A lot of well-meaning people are misled into assuming that what's going on is just automation. But as you said, technological change is a constant. And, you know, where you see a lot of the future of work conversations around, you know, the elimination of jobs and so on, it's often driven by Silicon Valley. I think that they're trying to, like, you know, essentially sort of hide the reality that it's their power and their control and their squelching of opportunity that's really driving job loss and not technological change or robots or automation.
Well, these people, see, up on Capitol Hill, like you hear these people say all the time, they like to make people believe that the economy is like the weather. You can't control it. It just happens to us. What are you going to do about the hurricane? It's coming. You just better hang on. Well, the truth is the economy is like a train. You can control how much coal goes in the furnace of it. You can control the size of the wheels, the speed of it. You can slow it down. You can speed it up. It is an economy is a social institution. It is an institution constructed by four people. And whoever gains most leverage over other people within that system can use that leverage to disadvantage them. This is why we have to have a strong public sector to make sure that the rules are fair, that nobody can dominate everybody else in the market square, that you have reliable products, that workers are treated with dignity and respect. This is why you need a public sector, because the market on its own will concentrate. But if you have a public sector that says, no, we're going to make sure competition is strong, labor is treated fairly, no discrimination, then that's when you have a strong free market economy, even though free market is really more of an ideal than a reality. It always has been. Well, you know, one of the things we're seeing from Amazon now is what I call the Amazon sweepstakes. All these local governments falling all over themselves to try to get Amazon to be the second headquarters. What's your take on the situation?
I mean, it's crazy. We've got cities all over the country who are bending over backwards to give away all these public dollars to Amazon while they're simultaneously telling their citizens, oh, we don't have any money for infrastructure, services, but somehow we've got billions of dollars to give to Amazon to bring them in. I mean, it's astonishing what's on the table. I mean, you've got cities like the city of Fresno has offered to basically let Amazon take 85% of Amazon's tax revenue that they would pay at this new corporate headquarters, put it into a special fund that Amazon would essentially control. They would decide how those tax dollars are spent. You've got New Jersey where there's an offer for $7 billion on the table to go to Newark. I did a little back of the napkin. If you took that $7 billion and put it into the Small Business Administration's loan guarantee programs, you could basically get rid of the fees and interest for tens of thousands of small business loans for years to come.
Now,
you know?
Stacey, what would that do to small business development?
Well, it would open up all this opportunity. You know, sure. SBA loan guarantees, they disproportionately go to entrepreneurs who are low income, who are women, and who are people of color. You know, it goes exactly to the kinds of places where we need to create opportunity. And you think about those businesses growing in their own communities all over the country,
sure.
creating jobs in those communities, as opposed to one city, all this money going to this incredibly wealthy company. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense when we think about trying to solve inequality or any of the other problems that we're facing.
Well, this whole Amazon sweepstakes conflicts with the core ideal of America, which is opportunity. What do you think, Leah?
I think that's right. I mean, I think this is going to be a direct wealth transfer from public to private, and not just from public to private, but from public to one of the most powerful and wealthy private companies out there already.
Yeah, from scrounging local public governments to a enormously wealthy company.
Yeah. Exactly.
The money is getting sucked straight up.
Exactly. And I think it kind of, you know, is just another version of this trend where money that used to be local, that used to be within communities, within the main streets of local communities, and now instead just being vacuumed to a few cities and kind of, you know, further contributing to this lack of control that people feel over their local communities.
But Lena, imagine a little bit about what Stacey just said. I mean, what if instead of all this money that's being funneled and thrown at Amazon, what if it was given to small local entrepreneurs, people of all colors, all cultures, all faiths, immigrants, Americans who are born here, just giving them money to help spur that small business spirit that everybody in the White House from the Capitol says that's what we believe in? What if that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would lead to, you know, a huge number of positive developments from, you know, more job growth. Like, small businesses are an outsized creator of new jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the huge declines in new business formation that we're seeing directly links to job creation.
Right.
I think, you know, it would help distribute wealth. It would make sure that more and more wealth is now, instead of being concentrated in a single company, you know, more distributed among lots of different businesses. And that directly ties into, you know, political inequality,
sure.
equality, because concentration of economic power also concentrates political power.
Yes.
So, you know, the kinds of complaints that people have about the immense grip that big corporations have over our political system would also be help mitigated through anti-monopoly policies, from ensuring that there was more competition, not just in our economy, but also in our politics and our democracy.
You know, the leaders in San Antonio had an interesting take on this Amazon sweepstakes, didn't they?
That's right, they did. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you had all of these mayors and all these cities kind of bending over backwards, kind of, you know, selling the farm to Amazon. And San Antonio said, like, we will not sell the farm. We do not believe in this. They, you know, basically said, we're a great place. We have a lot to offer. If you want to come here, if you want to help, you know, San Antonio, then you should do that on our own terms. We're not going to basically, you know, give you this huge wealth transfer and deprive our community in this way.
Hooray for them.
You know, one other thing that I think is really striking about this whole sweepstakes is how Amazon has engineered this thing at the very moment when people are starting to notice its power and starting to be concerned about what it's doing. It's engineered this situation where you have local elected officials all across the country signaling to their constituents that Amazon's further growth is something that we should all fervently wish for. You know, at a time when they really should be taking leadership to stand up and say, what's going on here? Is this really good for our economies? Amazon has gotten them to do exactly the opposite thing. And at the end of the day, that may be more valuable to the company than the money that it gets.
Exactly. Yeah. And what a better way to neutralize, right? To neutralize any of the politicians that would otherwise maybe potentially dare to speak out against it. Right? So if you have, say, you know, local officials in New Jersey trying to speak out, and then you hear come and offer them this great deal, I mean, that really puts people in a conflicted position.
Mm-hmm. And also, does anybody really, really believe that any of these offers from these local governments mean anything to Amazon in terms of its location decision? I mean, they know where they're going.
Right.
They just want to see if they can dangle that little string and how high we're going to jump for it. And I say, don't jump for it. You know, I was talking to my son, who is a city councilman in Minneapolis. And this newspaper asked him, well, what are you going to do to make sure that you can induce Amazon to come to Minneapolis? And he said, nothing. We have great schools. We have great parks. We have a strong social environment here. We're working on getting better every day. And if they want to come here and experience good schools and a well-trained workforce, they can come just like a whole bunch of other companies have come. But the companies that come from Minnesota that are now Fortune 500, most of them were small Minnesota companies at one time. Mm-hmm. They were somebody's idea that came up, not some big monstrous, multi-headed monster that just sort of like blessed us with its presence. I mean, I'm a little worried about the fact that we're looking at this thing all wrong. We should be trying to grow local talent as opposed to just reward the people who already have.
I mean, I think one really incredible thing about anti-monopoly and antitrust is just what a feedback loop there is here, right? So it's like on the one hand, you have Amazon concentrating all this power, hollowing out all of these main streets, kind of controlling the economy in ways that are basically reducing the opportunity for other businesses. And that's in turn what leads all of these politicians to feel like so slavish, to feel like they have to really jump for Amazon, because it's like they need jobs, right? So it's like the way in which Amazon is concentrating power and all of the negative effects that it's having in communities is then the very conditions which are making these politicians feel like they have to be so subservient. And I'll also say that Amazon is also leading to further consolidation throughout the rest of the economy, sure. Right? So it's accelerating all of these trends that we're seeing. The other week we heard that CVS and Aetna were talking about potentially merging. Sure. That was because of, you know, suggestions that Amazon is going to be making a bigger play in the pharmacy business.
Well, I mean, you know, and if you look at the pharmacy business, what do you have other than Rite Aid, CVS, and Walgreens?
And Walgreens and Rite Aid merged.
There you go. Kaboom. I mean, it's terrible. You want to go get some ibuprofen, you know, you're going to have a hard time going to anybody else, right? I mean, imagine starting a small local pharmacy nowadays. The other thing about Amazon that really kind of tweaks me is that they're essentially a trading company, right? They don't really make, there's no Amazon products, unless y'all can correct me. But what there are is thousands of other products that other people make that they offer a platform on which to sell. And they have such power in the market that they can determine price that they pay or that the goods are sold for. They can determine what page on the after a search comes up that the product appears on. I mean, they can really control a whole lot of other business activity that flows through them. Mm-hmm. What do y'all think about that?
Well, they are, in fact, manufacturing a growing number of the things that they sell. They have seven lines of clothing. They're now the largest apparel retailer. They're fast becoming one of the largest apparel manufacturers.
Do they prefer their own goods over those of others?
Absolutely. I mean, this has been shown in studies that have found, you know, that the carousel at the bottom of, you know, you might also like these things. Amazon sticks their own stuff in there, even when the consumer's search terms wouldn't necessarily favor that product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, we've been doing these interviews with manufacturers. We've been interviewing small and mid-sized manufacturers across the country, you know, apparel makers, book publishers, toy makers, shoe makers, all these different companies. And they won't say this out loud on the record
because
they're afraid. They're afraid of retaliation from Amazon, but they are terrified about what's happening. And they articulate the importance of a market where there's lots of retailers because then you have lots of ways to sell. You can introduce new products. And they say Amazon is the scariest thing that they've ever seen.
And it's worth just noting that Amazon has rolled out its private brand, it's the goods that it's manufacturing, through stealing the insights from all these other businesses that have been using its platform, right? So for years, it just Amazon had this like petri dish where it was just observing all of the products that other businesses were selling that were doing well, and then it just swooped in and took all those insights and was, you know, basically able to introduce exact replicas of those products, you know, undercut them on price, and then privilege their placement on its website. So that's very extractive, right? It was all these other individuals, all these other entrepreneurs that undertook the original risk, and yet the profit and the ultimate reward of that risk is going to Amazon.
Well, Lena, you used the term, I think you said, I'm not sure which term you used, but the word parasitic, I think, might also work. You know, that they basically, you know, tried to exploit the talents of others. And I think that can't do anything other than diminish initiative and entrepreneurial, you know, drive. I mean, if you know that you can come up with the coolest pair of jeans ever, you know, worn by any person, and yet Amazon can just watch the sale of your jeans on their platform, then mimic those jeans and sell them for $10 less, why try? You know, it's this is, and here's the other thing. What is the United States Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission, and attorneys general all over this country doing about this problem?
I think this sort of short-term focus on consumer prices is also really blinded officials to the long-term impacts, both on prices and consumers, but also on workers and businesses and communities. You know, antitrust enforcement used to have a broader range of concerns,
right?
And we really need to bring that back. I mean, I think that was part of why this Whole Foods merger just sort of sailed through, is that we're not thinking holistically about the economy and the importance of how do we structure this in the public interest. But I also just want to quickly say, you know, that there are a lot of opportunities at the local level to take on this issue. I mean, not only talking to state attorneys general who have power over competition and need to be looking at concentration issues more closely, but also, you know, local governments can look at how they're privileging Amazon through subsidies. I mean, Amazon's not only getting subsidies for its headquarters, but it's also getting them for a lot of the warehouses it's been building. Those aren't good jobs. We shouldn't be giving public dollars for that. So cities need to be looking at that. And there are also a lot of things that cities can do in terms of their procurement policies, where they're buying goods and services. How about not buying from Amazon, but supporting local businesses?
You know,
zoning policies. There are all kinds of ways in which city officials and local community groups can help build up a local economy and not be taken in by the kind of concentration that's overrun so much of the country.
Yeah. Lena, you got any final thoughts with us?
I would echo much of that. I mean, I think there are a lot of opportunities at the local level. I do hope that this is an issue that, you know, state AGs will look at more closely in addition to officials of the Federal Trade Commission and DOJ. And I just want to underscore a point you made earlier, which is that this is not the weather. Nothing about Amazon's dominance was inevitable.
Right.
It was entirely the product of laws and regulations and rules and how we chose to structure them. And so I think pressure to, you know, restructure these laws and regulations to make sure we have a more democratic economy, one that where power is not so concentrated, is something that's definitely something we can do.
Well, I want to thank you all for the work that you're doing. Lena Khan, Stacey Mitchell, you guys are awesome. You are on the forefront of fighting for a more democratic economy and society. This has been another edition of We the Podcast. Check us out next month, where we're going to talk about how people outside of the millionaire and billionaire class experience the economy. Take care.